Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Health Star Worldwide Radio Network. Because, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And, you know, we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. It is a nasty thing, trust me. We have an exciting show planned for you today, along with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, founder of the Caregiver Space with over 145,000 strong. We will be interviewing caregiver, author, radio show host, and expert on care, on giving hope to caregivers, Peter Rosenberger. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to this show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially on our new simulcast on the Blab Video Television Network, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers, we know a few things, but the one thing we know is that they are caring, and they're selfless, and they're sacrificial. Oh, yeah, they have this really bad habit called being prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. You know, that's why the airlines tell you that in the event of an emergency, put your mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And why do they do that? That sounds so selfish, doesn't it? Well, because they know that if you don't put your needs above your loved one's needs, then you will black out and then you won't be of any good to anybody. And we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws in this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Fortunately, folks, there is only one way out. You can't go around it, can't go under it, can't go above it. You got to go through that grief. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you kind of feel like you're stuck. Hey, I want to take this time to thank last week's guest, Cassidy. Cassidy Bastian, founder of the Caregivers Hub. You can hear that interview and see that video on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And by the way, while you're there, we have a free gift for you just for taking a very short quiz that will determine if you are a candidate for burnout. All right, enough of that. Peter, thank you for joining us. Thank you for agreeing to the interview. Adrian, thank you for co-hosting with me.
You're welcome.
Welcome to the show.
Well, you're quite welcome. Thank you for letting me come on. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you. And Adrian, good to see you again. You always look wonderful.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Likewise. Blade, good to see you.
And I don't look wonderful. Everyone else does, but I don't. Okay.
Caregiver Blade.
Yeah, that's right.
Engineer Blade. He wears many hats. So, Peter, why don't you take a moment or two, if we define a moment as a minute, and just tell us, for those people, for those unlikely people who have never heard of you, don't know who you are, just who is Peter Rosenberger and why was he put on God's green earth?
Well, I've yet to determine why I was put on God's green earth, but I've been a caregiver now for 30 years. I married a woman right out of college. She was already hurt by the time I met her. She'd had a terrible car accident. Didn't understand what that meant. She'd had about 20 operations by the time I met her. Wow. And I saw this beautiful young woman who's remarkable courage and tremendous singing voice. We were both music majors here in Nashville. And I was a pianist. She was a singer. Extraordinary gal. And I thought, well, you know, I'm gonna take care of this woman for the rest of her life. Had no idea what that would mean, no idea how well I would succeed, and had no idea how miserably I would fail. And Along the way, I've learned a few things, but the surgery count has escalated to what I can count at 78. She gave up both of her legs in the 90s, one after each son. More than 60 doctors. I kind of stopped counting about 5 years ago at 60. 12 hospitals, 7 insurance companies, and we've crested now $9 or $10 million actually at this point. So, and it's all doesn't seem to be any sign of this thing relenting. I saw a thing just this morning on the in the news that talked about the 50 most dangerous drugs on the market.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, I was going through the list of some of the things she takes, and I saw that she had at least 5 of them that she's taken every month. But, well, this is not good. but along the way, I've learned a few things about life, about love, about faith, about God, about caregivers, about what happens to us as caregivers when we are dealing with something like this that just stretches on and on and on and on. You know, you do this for 30 years and you learn a few things. And I'm on a mission here to help my fellow caregivers stay strong and healthy. And clearly you and I intersect on that. We're in the 20 plus year club. So
yeah,
one caregiving husband to another one. I appreciate you letting me come on your show.
Well, you've got 10 years on me, so that means you've got 10 years more wisdom that I've yet to learn. I wanted to ask you. Go ahead. Shouldn't talk over my guest. So I was going to ask you, there's a 1 or 2 second delay, so that's why we're always talking over each other, so we're just not being rude here, so everybody knows. So the caregivers that always say, this is the famous line I always hear, I didn't sign up for this. Well, Peter, you actually did sign up for this. Because you kind of knew what you were getting into, but not really. You just had like a teaser.
I knew I was going to be taking care of someone. I didn't know what all that involved. And it's like I was saying a minute ago, well, sorry about the delay there, but I've got 10 years of failures on you because I've forgotten more things than most people will ever make. I mean, I've just, everything I've learned through failure. And so, you know, I did sign up for it. And this is what I do, and this is who I am. But along the way, I've had to learn to carve out my own identity through this. I'm not just my wife's husband. I'm not just my wife's caregiver.
Yeah.
Individual who has my own needs and so forth.
There is a problem with your sound, Peter. Sometimes you're higher than others. Maybe if you can talk a little closer to your mic, that might help. We'll experiment with that while we're asking you the next question. You know, I've heard a lot of your stuff on the internet and on, you know, your website. You're a little different than most caregiver experts that I've heard in that you seem to have a very wide range of wisdom that includes like almost every practical aspect of how to survive caregiving. I mean, you take it to the next level. Where did all this wisdom come from?
Failure.
I mean, sounds like Thomas Edison.
I don't know how to say it any better than that. I mean, you know, when you've done it, I think it was Albert Einstein that said, he said, I'm not that smart. I've been doing it for so long. And, you know, I think I've been at this for so long. And when you stay in the trenches with a helmet on and there's gunfire going on all around you on a regular basis, you know, you kind of figure out when to duck your head. And, you know, I do martial arts. I'm a black belt in Hapkido, and we have to be thrown a lot, and we have to learn how to fall properly so that we don't get injured when we fall. And I can do everything and so forth. And Adrienne's having a lot of noise there, isn't she?
I'll mute her temporarily there. Go ahead.
One of the things my instructor says, he tells us that when you fall improperly, it's a self-correcting problem.
I'm available to respond now.
I think that's the deal with being a caregiver, is that when you go through these things, some of it becomes a self-correcting problem. And so you learn the hard way sometimes what not to do the next time. I mean, you know, what is it Homer said to Marge one time on The Simpsons? Sorry doesn't put the thumbs back on the hands, Marge. You know, and you've got to learn some of those things along the way. And so that's why I have the gray hair that I have.
Oh, yeah, I do see some gray.
I'm only 30. I tell people I'm only 30. Look at me. This is what caregiving does to you. That's what you got to look forward to, Dave. Heck, I'm Puerto Rican.
Well, yeah, I have a solution to the gray hair, and that's what it is right there. So tell me, Peter, how did this journey of yours affect your faith? I mean, where was your faith before and after? Because faith is a very important thing to caregivers. A lot of people can't survive without it, you know, and I'm not only faith in God, some people, you know, you got to have your faith in something. I mean, if you're going to sit down in a chair, you're going to have faith that that chair is not going to break on you. But God is a very big deal to caregivers. Explain what that means to you.
Well, I haven't met many caregivers been doing it as long as I have that are atheists. And I haven't met any caregivers been doing it as long as I have been atheist. You know, my faith was strong before I came into this relationship, but it was very infantile, very immature. I mean, of course, I was infantile and immature. I was 22 when I asked Gracie to marry me. And along the way, that faith has gone through. I was reading it just in James, the quote where James said, you know, we count it all joy when you go through these hard times because it builds up perseverance. You know, for me, it's not this close your eyes and pray real hard. You look more spiritual and you have more faith. You know, some people do that when they pray. They just kind of squint their eyes real tight and they call out Jesus six times. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, it just becomes a ritual. For me, it's just that deep sense of resolve, resolution, conviction, core conviction that drives me on this to understand that there's more going on than I can understand, and it's okay for me to trust him with this, and I don't have to figure out all the answers. I think somebody said the other day, well, you know, I was in an interview, and they asked me, well, how can you be so joyful knowing what the future holds? Because, you know, Gracie's situation is not going to necessarily get better as she gets older. Yeah. And I looked at him kind of incredulously and said, well, because I know what the future holds. Yes, we've got, in this lifetime, we're going to have some challenges that are even greater than what we have right now. We're going to deal with some hard, hard realities. And we're no stranger to hard realities. But we also know that there's more to it than this. And we also know that God has spared us from something far worse than amputations and multiple surgeries and 30 years of caregiving and chronic pain and surgeries and all that kind of stuff. There's something far worse than that. And through his grace, he spared us of this. And I can trust him with him. And sometimes I'm slipping my scared hand into his scarred hand. That's on a pretty much on a regular basis. But dark, deep moments when you start seeing his provision in ways that you didn't expect.
Yeah. Hey, you know, your name. Oh, that's better. I was going to tell you to lower your there. Now we can see who you are. Now I see all that gray hair. Adrian, you have anything you want to ask Peter just off the top of your head?
At what point did you realize what you'd signed up for?
I was about 25 years old. I was in the hospital with Gracie, and she was having another fusion surgery where they had to chip out bone from her hip and put it in her ankle joint to fuse that so that it wouldn't, I mean, remove that source of pain in her ankle, because her legs were basically almost severed in the wreck, and they reattached them, and we spent a long time trying to save them. And this was a pretty ugly surgery. And she'd been, you know, she'd been a lot of pain following the surgery. They have a hard time getting her out of pain anyway. And I'd been with her around the clock for a couple of days at this point. And this is in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m. And she went into a grand mal seizure, too much painkiller. And I got the nurses down there, and it took three of us to hold her down, and she's throwing up everywhere. And it was just god awful. I mean, those of us who've watched seizures understand it. You don't have to explain it to somebody. If you've seen a seizure, and the nurses, she finally blacked out, which is not atypical after a seizure. You know, you black out and kind of your body's kind of rebooting itself sometimes. And the nurses got her all cleaned up and so forth. And I'm sitting over there in a chair, just looking at her in front of, I'm facing the hospital bed. and I'm covered with vomit. And the nurse looked at me, she said, "Are you okay?" And I kind of muttered out, "Yeah, I'm okay," but I wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. And I remember the old days when we had charts, not everything electronic. And so I just, nurses cleaned up and left, and she was okay. They make sure she was all right. About 4 in the morning, I'm sitting out there in the hallway at the hospital, and I get her chart, nurse's station. I started reading, and I didn't care if it was off limits or not. At that point, I just didn't care. I always thought we were supposed to do stuff like that, but I just didn't care. And I noticed that it was volume 4 of 4 at that time. Now, this is a long time ago. And it eventually grew to volume 7 of 7, and then it went electronic. And this was just at one hospital. And I started reading all the surgery reports and everything. I saw the summary of all this stuff. And I knew she had a wreck. I knew enough of these things going on, but I've never really read the chart before. And really nobody else has besides me, other than medical professionals, that even her family has it. And I was smart enough to see that this is not just a car wreck where somebody's going to have a broken leg and they're going to know when the weather's changing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is devastating. This is a lifelong process of devastation. And I started sinking at that point. And it took me down a path of about 12 years of really dreaming with coming to grips with what had happened to my wife, what I'd gotten myself into, that I was trapped. I couldn't just leave her, but I was staying with her. I was committing myself to a lifetime of this. And that was a hard place for a young man. And it's a hard place for a 53-year-old man. So, you know, it's a hard thing to willingly and knowingly put yourself between someone who is vulnerable and even worse disaster. Mm-hmm. And yet that's what we do every day. And through a lot of process that we couldn't do on your show, but, you know, I came to a measure of acceptance with certain realities, growth, maturity, help. And now I've aggregated all this and I'm offering it to my fellow caregivers, because I think I'm still on a mission, Dave, to reach that 25-year-old version of myself who sat there in the hallway with covered with his wife's vomit, reading her chart. You know, that guy deserves a lot of compassion and help. And there are a lot of those guys out there. There are a lot of those women out there who are dealing with this. They're taking care of special needs children. They're taking care of aging parents. They're taking care of a spouse or brother, sister, whatever. The myriad of scenarios are all over the place, and they do it in isolation, and they do it in a very lonely place. And that's why your show is so important, because they hurt, and they're afraid and feel guilty for even admitting that they hurt. Mm. And that's what I'm on a mission to be able to hope the caregiver is more than just the title of my book. Hope for the caregiver is this conviction that we as caregivers can live a calmer, healthier, and dare I say it, an even more joyful life, even while we're dealing with harsh and grim realities. But because we're dealing with harsh and grim realities doesn't mean we have to be harsh and grim. Hmm. And this is what I'm on a mission to do.
Wow. Wow. This is a good time for a break, huh? Yeah. Why don't we take a break and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on HealthStar Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only 3 types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Peter Rosenberger, author, caregiver, radio show host, and my co-host, Adrian Gruberg. Peter, I got to ask you, what is the number one piece of advice you seem to be giving caregivers over and over and over again?
I think it's they're not doing it to you. They're just doing it. And when you're taking care of somebody who's impaired, whether it's physically, emotionally, pharmaceutically, doesn't matter. We are the closest one to that person, and they tend to act out in a way that is hurtful to us. They may say or do things that are hurtful to us, and we don't have to take it personally. We don't have to go to every fight that we get a ticket to, you know, and we can let a few things go and recognize that they're not doing it to us. They're just doing it, and it's okay. That's the first thing I tell a lot of folks, just to calm them down. The biggest issue that I found with caregivers, and bar none, and this is across the board with every caregiver I've ever met, and I'm going to turn on this light here a little bit. Does that help?
Yeah.
The biggest issue I found with caregivers across the board, every one of us, is we lose ourselves in someone else's story, and we lose our identity. This is what I'm on a huge mission to help caregivers learn to speak in their own voice. And this really was driven home to me at the piano. My pastor asked me to play as people were coming into church, just to keep more, you know, reverent atmosphere as people were coming in. Now, my wife's a no kidding singer. I mean, we're in Nashville, and the governor had her singing his inauguration. Mrs. Bush had her singing in 2004 Republican National Convention in New York at Madison Square Gardens. I mean, she's a real no kidding singer.
Wow.
And I've been accompanying her for a long, long time. But when I sat down in my church to play, and you can see this on my website, this thing I do, Play in the Melody, I'm actually sitting at the church doing this. I was playing these hymns that I've been playing my whole life, and all of a sudden I was hearing her voice in my head, and I was just playing the harmonies. I wasn't playing, as we say in Nashville, I was playing the changes. I wasn't playing the melody. And I realized I had to go back and retrain myself to play the melody. And I learned how to play in my own voice, even though I was kind of hearing her and I was playing around it. And that was a real aha moment for me as a caregiver to realize, oh, this is it. This is the thing. We caregivers got to learn to play in our own melody. We've got to learn to speak in our own voice. And it starts with saying the word I, not in an egotistical way, but we caregivers tend to speak in first person plural or third person singular. We just got home from the hospital. How you doing, Peter? Well, she had a bad night. Our situation is such. And I realized, okay, how do we help a caregiver speak in first person? Now, when you speak in first person singular, that's when the tears come. That's when the stammering comes. You know, I hurt. I'm tired. I'm scared. I'm pissed. I'm very upset about this, or I'm resentful, or I'm discouraged. I'm lonely. I don't care what comes after the word I, because that's honest. And that we can start. I had a guy call into me one time, and he said, I take care of my wife with ALS, and I suck at it. And I said, well, congratulations. Now we can have a conversation, because you're being honest with where you are. And he doesn't speak it. The fact that he shows up every day for work is extraordinary. So that's the issue that I go after with caregivers, is to help them learn to speak in their own voice.
Wow. You really connect when you talked, Peter. how long have you been, let's call it a ministry. How long have you been in the ministry of caring for other caregivers besides your wife?
Well, I don't care. My wife's not a caregiver. So I don't care for her. I think that it's been a growth process of learning to really take care of me first, because you can't export what you can't make work at home. And so I've had to learn to deal with myself. These are things that I preach to myself about. I would love to take credit for just being this incredibly inspiring, motivational person, but I'm not. This is very selfish for me. The more I speak to people like you, Dave, the more I hang out with people like you and talk about these issues, the stronger I get. My favorite story in scripture is one of my favorites. is when David was at Ziklag. Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
And all his men's family, they were all kidnapped by the Amalekites, and all their possessions were taken and so forth. And they all gathered up stones and they were going to stone David. His own men were. They were so distraught with him. And David encouraged himself in the Lord and said, that's what he said. But for him, he just did it for himself. And then they were able to move forward and go back, and God gave him the guidance and wisdom to what to do next. But I think that's what we do as caregivers. We encourage ourselves in the Lord, and that's what I do when I come on your show, when I do my own show, when I get out and speak to people. I'm speaking to myself here. I am strengthening myself and reminding myself of these things. And that's how I do it. And I've been doing this for some time, but every day it's like the beginning all over again. Because did you ever see that movie, 51st Dates or something like that?
Yeah, my favorite movie. Drew Barrymore.
Us as caregivers, every day we have to get up and read notes and rediscover, oh my goodness, this is the deal. We have to remind ourselves that we have these things in our lives, and we have to remind ourselves of these truths. We have to remind ourselves of all these things, because it's so easy to forget. You are literally, well, it's like, did you know that airlines, when they're on autopilot, and boats and ships and so forth, when they're on autopilot, they're not on course 90% of the time. They set the autopilot on, but they're off course almost all the time. But the autopilot is constantly making adjustments to allow for the winds, the waves, or whatever that's buffeting them off course.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we are, caregivers. But what's our heading? What's our autopilot? And that's a real problem for us as caregivers. I was, you ever snowmobile, Dave? You're Colorado, or where are you?
California. I was born in Brooklyn, but I never was able to. It was on my bucket list, still is.
I snowmobile a lot, and I'm in Montana doing that. And my son and I were out not too terribly long ago, and we were out in the backcountry, and we're 10 miles from the house, way back in the backcountry. And the house is 10 miles from the paved road, and that gives you an idea how remote we are. And I'm a pretty good sledder, and I know what I'm doing, but we got off the trail. The wind was blowing, it covered all the tracks, and we took a wrong turn, and we ended up out this kind of a slope field on the side of this mountain, and couldn't find the trail. And then my machine, I was looking at the trail, my machine just got stuck. Well, they're pretty tough to get out, but when you get them out, you can't let off the throttle. You got to get going where you're going to go, or you're going to get stuck again. I didn't know where the trail was. I couldn't see the marker. And I thought, if I get unstuck, I still don't know where I'm going, and I'm going to get stuck again, and maybe even a worse face. And that's a very unsettling feeling. You know, I mean, it's really terrifying. And the sun was going down, the wind was picking up, the wind began to twitch. That was the big part. And so I was getting a little bit kind of panicked, what we call here in the South, the high sphincter moment. And I was looking for the trailhead, and finally we found one of the markers for the trail. So, okay, now I got my bearings. Now we can get the machine unstuck, and now I can aim for someplace. That's where we are as caregivers. Mm-hmm. That is exactly where we are as caregivers. We are stuck, and we don't know where the trail is. My job, my passion, my ministry, anything you want to call it, is I want to point myself and fellow caregivers where solid footing is. Going to get unstuck, and we're going to head with that. We're not going to try to get all the way down the mountain. We're just going to get to solid footing first. Then we'll worry about getting down the mountain.
Yeah. You know what frustrates me the most, Peter and Adrian, I'm sure Adrian, you've had this problem as well, is when you give a caregiver, you know, they're asking you a very specific question, you're giving them the advice they need to know, and they just don't receive it. They don't take it. They don't get it. Have you ever had that problem, Adrian?
Yeah. Well, I think communication is one of the most important things you need, is good communication skills, whether it's the doctors and people in, you know, who are treating your loved one, or your loved one that you need to communicate with better, and you really need to learn to listen.
Yeah.
Listening is really important there. If If they're not ready, they're not going to hear you. I mean, people are in denial, and a lot of people want to stay in denial. And a lot of people want to believe that no one can help them.
Why is that? Why do people want to stay in denial? Why do they believe no one can help them?
Well, people sometimes are throwing pity parties for themselves.
Feels good to have a pity party, right?
Yeah, and there's self-justification and self-glorification. Sometimes it's hard for people to let it in, even if they've asked you the question.
How do you handle that, Peter?
Well, denial is a very comfortable place. The thing I found with caregivers is that a lot of times we're paralyzed with fear. And so if I have a hard time getting through to someone, and just as a side note, it's not enough to be right. By the way, you can be right, but it doesn't matter if people aren't able to receive it. You know, we're in good company. Our Savior came to this world and he was right. And he came into his own and his own received him not. So we're in good company if we're imparting truth and nobody's listening. What I try to do for those that I'm talking to that are having a hard time processing what I do is I boil it down to the next step. What's the next right thing? Don't try to tell them what they need to do or this or that. I don't try to tell people what they need to do. That's none of my business. They're going to have to, you know, they got to experience their own experience. I'm not here to orchestrate. I can't carry their life. I got enough drama in my own. I don't need someone else's. So what I do is I offer, what's the next right thing? The next right thing I found for me sometimes is just to get a bowl of soup and take a nap. and I don't try to overthink it. You know, give us this day our daily bread. Preach is real great till you have to live it every day. And that's what I do. And that's what we caregivers do. And that's how I've done this for 30 years. And nobody can do this for a lifetime, but anybody do it for 24 hours. So that's kind of the mentality I take. So when I see a blank look on a caregiver's face that I'm talking to, I boil it down to the actual next step. And the next step, maybe just sit down for a minute. Just here's a cool glass of water. And I don't try to overthink it because I know that there's no roadmap that I can give them when to navigate. They can't go back to that snow-covered field. I was 10 miles away from the house. I didn't need to know where the trail was 5 miles down the road. I just needed to know where the next stupid marker was. That's it. Once I got there, then I can catch my breath and figure out where the next marker is. But that's the way we have to look at it as caregivers. So I try to avoid getting those blank stares that people give me by not going down too much information. They're on information overload. I mean, sometimes they're literally shaking with fear, with paralysis of the mind of not knowing what to do. So they don't know, they just kind of freak out. So you just say, here's a bowl of soup. Let's just stop for a moment. Take a breath, catch your breath, have a cup of coffee. And then we'll look at the next right thing here. It sounds real simple, and I don't mean to in any way insult people with this, but that's how you do it as a caregiver. And if somebody comes up that has 30 years of experience and tells you different, listen to them.
I mean, I think with anything, if you tell baby to take baby steps and tell them it's okay to take baby steps, that's important. And this, when you put it the next right thing to do, it's what the next right baby step is. You're not asking for a lot. Just have a cup of soup.
Have a bowl of soup and a piece of cornbread. And settle down. Why do you think Cracker Barrel's so successful? All they do is offer comfort food.
Right.
You know. Just don't overthink it. I think that's the problem we get into. We overthink it. And so many caregivers say, how much longer is this going to be? How am I going to do this? What am I going to do? And they're just freaking out and they're living in the wreckage of your future. You can't live there. And as long as you want to live 6 months out from now and cry about what's going to happen in 6 months, you're not dealing with today. And we have to deal with right now, right here, at this moment, this is what we got to deal with. And yeah, it may suck.
You can paralyze yourself with what ifs. You know, what if this happens? What if that happens? And then there's so much going on in your head, you can't really think clearly in the moment.
So you just
do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own.
Yep. You know,
there's a reason Jesus said that.
So, sorry about that. It happens every day at this time. I got to reset that. How independent is your wife? I mean, my wife, praise God, I'm very fortunate that she is very independent. I mean, she can bathe herself. She can fix the meals. She does housework around the house. I mean, she doesn't need me except for emotional support and for the few things that she cannot do by herself. But 90% of the time, she'd be just fine all by herself. Is your wife kind of like that? Or how independent is she? How much does she need you? Where do you find the time to do all this other stuff you're doing?
Well, those are several different questions. Let me take them one by one. She's had seasons of independence. There was a time when she taught herself how to snow ski as a double amputee. We learned with the disabled ski program. So she's had seasons of independence where she was driving and taking the kids to school and all those kinds of things. But then the last 6 years in particular have seen a rapid decline with her, and that's on a series of declining years. So we've gone through, for the most part, she's fairly dependent on a lot of things. I have either someone here helping me at the house part-time or I'm doing it all myself. I do the cooking and so forth. I mean, I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan and never let you forget I'm a man kind of thing, you know. And so it's there are seasons of this, but it hasn't been that way for some time where she can do those things. She's able to get over at church periodically and sing, and that's good. She does, and she got into the studio. I got her in the studio here in Nashville not too long ago. We laid down some tracks, and that was good because I wanted to hear her sing. But as far as the day-to-day activities and things like that, no, that's not where she is. Her problem is not her prosthetics or amputation. Her problem is that Gracie lives with an enormous amount of debilitating pain. 78 surgeries will do that to you. And she had an Evel Knievel kind of break. So she has tremendous arthritis, all kinds of just scar tissue and everything else. And so she's in pretty bad shape, but she keeps a pretty good attitude as well.
You know, I think it's your phone that's vibrating, and we can hear it on the microphone periodically because I've muted everyone else. Is your phone like on the same place that your computer is, your cell phone?
No, my phone's not vibrating. I actually muted Adrian. Sorry, Adrian, but because I kept hearing the dog and all that.
She's
very quiet here where I am, so I don't think it's me, but it could be.
Okay. You know? The mystery phone vibrator. Okay, we'll find out who it is.
Not here. Here's mine.
I actually came in here to the piano room where it's very quiet in here.
Good. And you're an excellent piano player, I assume. Of course you are, because I heard you. I heard you on your website. You're amazing.
I do okay. I've narrowed my focus down to what I play. I mean, I studied music in college, and so I was a music major and composition, and I can sit down and play jazz tunes and all that kind of stuff. But if I went to a party or something and they asked me to play, play something from the Eagles or whatever, I just don't do that anymore. I mean, I can read pretty much anything I need to read and play it. But I really focus now on just hymn arrangements that I do. In fact, I'm going to cut a CD of those arrangements that I do at my church because I play things that are comforting to me. And I play like somebody who's watched somebody suffer for 30 years. So when I'm playing the hymns of the faith, I want it to be reflective and authentic to my journey. I just don't sit down and bang it out. I really try to put my heart into it. That's how, Dave, quite truthfully, I minister to myself, and then it's very meaningful to know that the congregation is ministered to when they listen to me play, and I'm very grateful for that.
And your wife still sings. I mean, I heard her sing the national anthem. Was that very recently? She's amazing.
That was a recording she did of it, but she hasn't performed it live in some time. She did that at several events, Walter Reed and so forth, and then she's cut some. There's some more stuff on her website. I have to send it to you. She does an arrangement of we did together of "Be Still My Soul" and "Thom and Gilead" with orchestra. That's just that'll be so wonderful. And so we're getting her in the studio to cut more and more songs, That's good. That's on the record that I put together with it as well. And she doesn't do live events other than church anymore like she used to. She used to do a lot of big events, but it just takes too much steam out of her right now.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's take another break, and when we come back, we'll finish this up. We'll find out how we can get a hold of you and hear more about you and your amazing story, your book, your radio show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Peter Rosenberger, author, caregiver, radio show host, expert in everything. And my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberger from the caregiver space. Gruberger. Did I say Gruberger?
Oh, yes, you did. But there are people.
No, they're not related. All right. Do you have anything else you want to ask, Peter, Adrian?
Just wanted you to know we have somebody watching in Australia.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, top of the gave us 100 likes, which is very sweet.
I forget we're worldwide.
Yeah, I just wanted to call your attention to the fact that the three of us are. Sitting here knowing that it's not just seniors who are finding themselves in a caregiving situation. It's not just baby boomers. And it's not just all about only Alzheimer's. There's, as you mentioned, there are just so many other things going on in the world that people need care with. And it's just good to be with you guys.
Awesome.
We share the same mission.
And we're all spousal caregivers. I mean, what are the odds of three of them getting together in one place, huh? Peter, I wanted to ask you, for a lack of a better term, how did you go viral, your message? When did you feel that your message really started making a difference in caregivers' lives and that, caregivers who you'd never met before?
Well, my board of directors, we started a prosthetic limb outreach for amputees in West Africa some years ago. This was my wife's vision after giving up her legs. And we literally put legs on folks. We We teach and equip local workers in Ghana to build limbs for their own people. And I recycle prosthetic limbs that we gather all over the country, and they go to a local prison here in Tennessee where inmates volunteer to disassemble them. We've been doing this for some time through Standing with Hope. And then my board of directors came to me a while back and they said, you know, you've developed a set of skills as a caregiver that need to be shared with others. And we think you need to start a show. We think you need to write a book. You need to start talking about this. And I really wasn't even thinking that way. You know, I was doing my other stuff that I was doing. And so I sat down and said, okay, well, what would I say to my younger self? And that's what birthed all of this stuff. And then I got the radio show. Actually, when I went to the radio station, this is a secular station in Nashville, big station, big talk radio station. And they looked at me with a blank look on their face saying, you know, what are you talking about, a caregiver show? They had no idea. So they passed on it. So I went to a little small mom and pop radio station here in Nashville and started doing my show. Well, then the other big station called me. They said, we've been listening to your show. We want you to come over here. Come back over here. And I said, well, okay. And so they made me a pretty good offer. And I went over there and started doing it. And the show has grown. I think I'm their number one show on the weekends. Picked up on iHeart around the world through the iHeart program. And it really resonated with folks. And then I started speaking on this and being interviewed with it and talking about it. The book came out and I've done quite a bit of media over it. WebMD, USA Today, Today Show, you know, all Fox News and all that kind of stuff. And I write on this a lot. And again, it's just things I've learned from doing this for a very, very long time with a relentless situation. There's not one day that I don't have some level of drama, physical or emotional or spiritual drama that doesn't creep into this thing. And when you, it's like going to the gym. When you go to the gym that much, you're going to get sculpted. You know, you're going to see results. I don't necessarily see it in the same way. It's just that I get right to the core issues, I think, probably a lot faster than a lot of people. I don't dance around the hearts and rainbows and unicorns that maybe some people do about this topic. I see the scope of this thing. I was just talking with the traumatic brain injury program here in Tennessee recently. That's a tough group of people, Ben. I mean, those are not death sentences. They're life sentences. You think about that. Somebody has a traumatic brain injury, a child or something like that, and it's they're not terminal. This month, I'm going to be speaking to an elder law thing, and then in June, I'll be up in Baltimore speaking to Huntington's disease. I don't know how much you know about Huntington's Disease Society, but that is a tough disease. And all of the caregivers that deal with that, man, they are really under it. So then I'm going to be doing a webinar with AARP later on this year, this summer. Jeff Foxworthy and I did a You Might Be a Caregiver If video we did for AARP a while back. I asked him, I said, you want to do this with me? And he said, well, yeah, just write out some jokes. I said, these aren't jokes. This is my life. You know, and the first one I think we started out with was, if you have a professional carpet cleaner on retainer, you might be a caregiver. You know, and then I had one the other day. He said, if you've got the wheelchair manufacturer on speakerphone while you're making a meatloaf, you're probably a caregiver. You know, if a hospital bed has not hampered your love life, you know, but you know, that's just my life. And people were kind of surprised that we could laugh and cut up with all this stuff. And I thought, man, you got to laugh at this. It's a muscle that I work in. And I think it just resonated with people that I was different, that something was different about the way I talked. I didn't try to gussy it up. I got right down to the guts of it and said, okay, here's where we are, folks. And, you know, I'm kind of a gunnery sergeant of caregivers. You know, I'm not going to sit there and paint a rosy picture. It sucks. You know, all right, here we go. Let's do it. And so I evidently that's resonated with folks. And I appreciate just that. Continue sharing it.
You're my new hero. I want to be just like you when I grow up.
You got to set your standards a little higher there, Dave. Go to set them a little higher.
Wow. Adrian, what's your next question?
I don't really have a next question.
That's
oh come on, guys!
I'm blown away.
I mean, Peter is so glib.
All right, I have a question. why did you have a
Why did you have a board of directors? Were you a 501c at that time?
Standing with Hope is.
And when did you start that?
The prosthetic limb ministry was started back in 2000. Our first trip was in 2005 to West Africa.
That's the ministry you're speaking of, prosthetic limb.
Nonprofit that we have that you can sponsor a limb with. This was Gracie's vision. We give the gift that keeps on walking, and it's a great ministry. You could go out and see that at standingwithhope.com. And then the caregiver thing is kind of birthed from that. You know, Gracie's reach, you know, you minister out of your wounds, Dave. I mean, that's the deal, because where the wound is, that's where the light gets in. And this is where, you know, where Gracie ministered out of her wounds as an amputee, and then I'm doing it as a caregiver. And I know what it's like to go down some dark paths as a caregiver. My story is not for the faint of heart, man. I mean, when I say I've made about every mistake you can make, I ain't kidding. And so I know the challenges on a caregiver. I know the heartache, and my heart breaks for my fellow caregivers. And so I want to come up alongside them, just like I wish somebody had done for me. And explain these things in a way that I could understand when I was 22 years old, when I was 25 years old, when I was 30 years old. Heck, when I'm 53, I want them to still explain to me. You know, I don't try to complicate it and don't gussy it up. I don't try to come up with high dollar words. Nobody cares about that stuff. And quite truthfully, David, nobody really cares about my opinion. My opinion is irrelevant. It's not important. My experience, on the other hand, is highly relevant. Opinion is the lowest form of conversation. You know, I'm not here to tell people my opinion. What I am here is, this is what I've learned through this. This is what I've experienced. This is what I've seen. This is what I've touched. You know, go back in scripture where it said, they overcame by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. Testimony is not my opinion. Testimony is what I've experienced. And this is what I've come to experience about life, about love, about God, about salvation, about the gospel. Through these things. And, you know, we have a Savior, Dave, who is the ultimate caregiver of a wounded bride. You know, that's the church.
Yeah.
And he gets this. He's been taking care of a wounded bride a lot longer than you and I have. And he gets this. And he that's comforting to me. That's strengthening to me, because I have a Savior who really understands my journey. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Now, how much publicity has Gracie been getting lately? I mean, is she ever on television? Was she ever interviewed? Does she play still?
Not anymore. She doesn't do as much anymore. I mean, she has a few things. She had an opinion article that they published about that she did on Fox News recently, some print stuff, but she doesn't do camera interviews. And every now and then she'll call into my radio show just to give me a mercy to make my ratings go up.
Does she write?
She does some, yeah. And hopefully she will be doing some more of that in the not so distant future. But she did a lot of media for a long time.
We've come to the end of our hour. We look forward to next week's show. We have a very important guest on. Thank you again for coming on. And my website, I put that down, caregiverscaregiver.com. And we've got blogs, we've got videos, we've got YouTube, we've got the radio show podcast, and now the video podcast. And we've got caregiver quotes. We call them care quotes. And just anything and everything to help make your life a little more tolerable, to help you get to the end of your journey, whatever that might be. But just never give up, never lose hope, never quit being positive, and just don't lose your sense of humor, okay? Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, or catch the program anytime, 24/7, right here on HealthStar Worldwide.